Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. How are you? In studio with me today is Kevin Corton. Kevin is the originator of Evolutionary Yoga, an integrative and innovative approach that unites yoga, tantra, somatics, and embodied education. His teaching has taken him around the world, from Europe to Asia, across the United States, and we are very honored to have a Kevin with us here today. Welcome, Mr. Kevin Corton, to the show.
Thank you, Kara. Good to be here.
Yeah, so today we're going to explore with you consciousness and deep listening and sound and how our body is a beautifully attuned and divine instrument. And so I want to start in an easy place. Hopefully it's a very lovely place to begin. Your life is a tapestry of sound, movement, and healing. And I'd love to know, did you sing as a child? And if so, do you have a powerful vocal memory that you can share with us?
What a great question. A couple of things come to mind. One is, one moment, a little water here. Excuse me. One is when I was a child running up and down the stairs, I remember making all of these sounds with my voice as I moved my body. And sometimes my voice would sail up into my skull and I'd feel it vibrate. And it was really fun. But after a while, my mother was like, oh, my God, Kevin. You know, it was pretty intense, I think. That's one memory. And then another memory that comes to mind also is sometime in grade school, we were in a choir, you know, simple choir in grade school, and the director had us singing, and he had me sing a note that was like above the first sopranos, and I was interested, like, oh, I guess I can sing higher than anybody else. So, you know, it was these dawnings of awakening, like, oh, I can do this, or where did that come from?
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were flying in the stratospheres. Yeah. So you began, I'm sure as a child you sang a lot of things, but I believe you then followed that love for those high flying notes, and you started to sing soprano in your church choir, if that's correct. And then you were drawn to probably the pretty normal path for many people: musicals, performance, singing, dancing, acting, and ended up, as far as I know, becoming a professional dancer and really doing a lot of tours, having very big audiences. And then at some point, yoga guided you back to sacred sound. So you seem to have come full circle. What has brought you back to sacred sound, and why have you left those big stages in the moment behind you, those big lights, maybe not big stages, because you also do a lot of teaching in wonderful conferences and workshops. What has brought you back to sacred music?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think the biggest influence consistently in terms of music when I look back was in the church. I was raised Catholic, and sometimes the homily was good and sometimes it wasn't, but I always was carried along by the music. And then I guess it was really in early high school, maybe when I was 15 or so, I was asked to be a cantor, you know, and I look back now, mm-hmm. cantor means chanter, right?
Yeah.
And for those who may not know, in the Catholic Church, it comes from the Latin Mass, and things changed in the Vatican II era. But basically, there would be a song leader or a cantor who would, you know, do something like, Alleluia, Alleluia, Alleluia. And then everyone else does it, right?
Beautiful.
And so, that call and response, so simple, but so beautiful. And then, you know, fast forward through my life a bit, I always say that musicals saved my life in high school. You know, it really opened up. I also discovered that, I have a talent for dancing, and like we could sing, and that was wonderful. And through various influences, I did focus mainly on dancing, even though I really mm-hmm. loved acting and singing. At one point, I thought I was going to be like a art song recital artist or maybe opera. Mm-hmm. That didn't last too long. But so I, you know, had this career in dance that was really beautiful, and I'm very grateful for it. It was something about wanting to express ourselves, right? And this is, in yoga, the voice relates to expression and communication, clearly, and we can also express through our body. And so that was dance. It's also very demanding to dance full-time professionally. And I guess, not to be unappreciative, but there was a point after a while where I felt like I was having to, what I call, dance on demand, you know, like, okay, mm-hmm. it's showtime, it's 8 o'clock. Here's the choreography. You have to do it perfectly this way at this time. And I really began to long for something that wasn't oriented towards performance, that was really about movement that would nourish me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, again, briefly, that's what really led me to somatics, you know, the Feldenkrais method, body-mind centering, continuum movement, and, of course, yoga. And that really was, you know, something that I could do in and for myself that wasn't for visual consumption. You know what I mean? It wasn't right. for the way it looked, and I didn't have to be perfect. And that was the beginning of a deeper inquiry. The way that voice came into that, it took a while because when I first encountered chanting and yoga, some of the teachers would have us chant to Hindu gods. And I was wary of that because I didn't really want to replace. I just really was sort of resistant to that. Let's just put it that way at the time. But, fast forward many more years. And when I started to study in the Vini yoga tradition, you know, the tradition associated with T. Krishnamacharya and T.K.V. Desikachar, who was the teacher of my mentor teacher, Adolphe Wartenbaker, you know, chanting was woven into the teaching. And right. because that's the way it traditionally was, if you study the texts, you study them by chanting them. And so somehow this really, I was able to open to chanting and in a new way, and I feel like it was a renaissance for me, really reconnecting to my voice the inner path.
Yeah, I'm sure also the teachings go much deeper into our bones if we're singing them and repeating them, and the whole idea of repetition, if we're learning something, that's a fantastic way to learn. I was thinking while you were speaking, I wish they were, you know, singing in the schools more, not just in the choir, but what about physics and mathematics? It would just be a wonderful way, call and response, mm-hmm. to embody mm-hmm. knowledge, right? To have that lineage that we can carry on. And I wanted to take note that the evolutionary yoga, which is your method that you develop, it is, the beauty is that it's drawing on all these different lines, right? So you were talking about body-mind centering, you were talking about Feldenkrais, somatics, tantra, yoga. So that is, I think, you know, I know a little bit about your work, this curiosity and this courage also to really be in the present moment and take the wealth of knowledge that's there, but also to include the wealth of knowledge that's there in yoga, so to say, but also to include this evolution of knowledge that we're having through other bodywork systems. I think you also have included Qigong, you know, some of the elements from Qigong into your work. So that's, and maybe, who knows, maybe some of the musical and some of the theater has also slipped in somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when you say, you know, in the last, I would say, 8 years, I've really been focusing mainly on what we'll call Vini Yoga, again, this particular lineage, but all those other beautiful disciplines kind of shimmer in the background and sometimes spark into different expressions just when I need it, you know, and then we'll see where it goes from here. When you mention, you know, using sound and using chant, you know, we used to learn things by heart. And the ear is, you know, listening is the first sense to develop. There's an interesting article that Moshe Feldenkrais wrote called On the Primacy of Hearing. That's really interesting, you know, from the time we're in utero, et cetera. But when I also teach anatomy, I train yoga teachers. And one of the subjects I teach is anatomy. And so I have, when we're learning the different directions of the spine, I taught sometimes doing call and response. And people were, you know, a little uncomfortable sometimes at first, and then they laugh. But then the next week, they remember it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really remember it. So it's a tool for memory. It's a tool for learning. And more than that, you know, this idea of what I said was sounding into silence. It's not a new idea, but, you know, sound is so interesting, as you know well, because you're such a master and such an incredible artist. You know, singing, chanting can connect us to other people, right? And it can also, we can use an outer recitation or outer sound to move into the inner sound and the inner silence, we could say. And then when we can go in and connect to what some people call the inner voice, you know, the true part of yourself that can guide you. And then we can come back out and live in the world more from a attuned, you know, orientation. That's what I've found. It's helpful, so helpful. And just fun.
Yeah. Joyous,
yeah.
Just simply joyous and fun. Yeah, I mean, I too tend to be nurtured by the practice of understanding that we're diving into deeper into silence, because we're tuning to our essence, which is also that inner voice. So a lot of people, they have an idea. I think they are worried about failing at meditation because they're looking for some kind of magical empty void. And my experience is actually that it's a very vibrational, high-frequency place. And isn't it beautiful that listen and silent have the same letters if we just, you know, flip them around, right?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. There you go again. I didn't realize that. I love that.
So, Kevin, you have been praised also as a master of translation, an excellent teacher who makes your classes. Now, this is coming from your students, challenging for the experience and yet understandable for the beginner. How are you able to do that? How are you able to keep that deep flow and be present so that the people that have more maybe experience can deepen their practice at the same time when absolute beginners can feel comfortable in a class?
Yeah. Well, you know, I do teach groups, and that's wonderful medium for many things. And I also, since I, stopped dancing full-time professionally and I, took my first yoga teacher training and yoga therapist training, I just knew from the beginning that I needed to work with people one-on-one, and only to find out a few years later that that really is the orientation of adults in yoga. Primarily traditionally we're taught one-on-one, at least in certain lineages or traditions. And so in that regard, when when I meet with individual students, it's who is this person? What are they interested in? What are their challenges? What are their goals? And then listening to what they want and need and creating practices for them that involve some combination of breath and movement and sound. Not for everybody, but many people, I find, they really want a way in and to be able to use their voice to calm the inner voices that are babbling. So which reminds me of so your question about how do you honor different people in a group. One of the ways is there's a particular way of teaching that I developed, and I see it in some of my teachers, where even when you're teaching a group, if you're orienting the movement to the rhythm of the breath, the breath is like the conductor and our body is the orchestra. The body is organized and orchestrated by the music of the breath, right? And so if you teach someone teach a class a simple movement, and then you say, now, please continue this at the pace of your own breath. So what's beautiful is you'll see people doing a similar movement, but it starts to overlap, these overlapping rhythms, because people are breathing in their own way. And so there are these sort of modules or pods of autonomy that are possible in a group, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
it makes perfect sense. You also take time. I'm not sure if you take the time or if you just sense that now that your instrument is so finely tuned that more and more melodies are arriving. You were talking about calming those babbling voices that we have and finding inner peace. I believe you also wrote a beautiful piece called Peace in Six, or the Peace Waltz. Do melodies come naturally to you, or do they chase after you and hunt you down in the middle of the night, or do you consciously have to work on writing new chants and new mantras?
What a great question. I mean, both, actually. I mean, obviously you can ask that question because you are a composer. There was one night where before I went to bed, I asked that a little song would come to me that I could possibly teach people at the end of a class. And my idea was that if we did it enough, everyone would know it, and we kind of share this song. And a few minutes later, I was almost falling asleep, and then this melody came to me in the words. And when you really want to fall asleep, but I got up and I recorded it. It's just four lines, and may we all be free, right, is the little song that came out of that. There was another piece, so that just kind of came to me, but I asked. There's something in traditional yoga where sometimes when you start a practice in the beginning, there are 10 steps of meditation traditionally, and the first one is Prarthana, and it's like an invocation. And sometimes traditionally you might do a chant, thanking the teachers, or many chants, or something simple like lighting a candle or doing a shorter chant. And in that beginning, the way we begin something, my teacher says, determines the outcome. And so you can sometimes ask for help. If there's something that you feel you need or want, you can ask for help. So that's what happened when I asked. And then there was another time where, I've been studying Vedic chant, which is very precise and specific. There's no improvisation way of carrying on the teachings of the ancient texts. Mm-hmm. So in that kind of chanting has basically three pitches, right? A middle one, an upper one, and a lower one. And I was working with that very simple range. But within that kind of simple range, I heard this particular melody come, and that's when the peace waltz, and I call it the peace waltz because it's one, two, three, one, two, three underneath. And it's like a 3-4 or a 6-8. And there were six names for peace that came to me in six different languages. And that, so I guess it comes in different ways, but this opening to composition is a gift, because I did write a song in high school, and then I didn't have any connection to that until the last few years. So, and I think I sent this to you recently. Another song that I wrote came from, that I've called Be Still and Know, which is from the Bible, right? One could look at it mm-hmm. as meditation instruction. And that came to me, and I put it together just a week or two ago. That's more of a song than a chant. I'm not always sure what the difference is, but it has a bigger range.
Yeah, it's interesting that we do have the labels of song, chant. I mean, of course, mantra is having to do with, you know, the seed sounds, right? And the text, but we can have chants, native chants, and English speaking chants. Do you sense there's a difference when you chant in your own mother tongue than when you chant the Vedic, the Vedic chants?
Or in Sanskrit or some other
language. Or Latin, of course, if you're coming from the Catholic Church.
Well, you know, this is a question that a lot of people, you know, have strong opinions about and debate. And I think, you know, traditionally in Sanskrit, you know, in a mantra, which, you know, mantra comes from the words manas, which is man, which is from manas, which means mind, and then pra mm-hmm. means tool, a tool for the mm-hmm. mind, or mm-hmm. that which protects the mind, right? Mm. So there's something about the capacity of the mind to just turn over memories, and it's very imaginative, right? And so sometimes we get caught, in a way, there's some sort of focus, some sort of dialogue going on often in the background. So mantra is the constructive practice of giving something nourishing or effective for the mind to rest on and into. And so sometimes, here's what I'm trying to, one thing I'm trying to say is that I've found that chanting or singing in a language that isn't your everyday language, it's not pedestrian, you're not using it to, you know, call up the bank and make a deposit, or, you know, there's something when we are chanting in a language that is, some people believe, sacred, but at least it's not ordinary, it's not everyday, that allows us to access a different part of ourselves, if that makes sense. One thing my teacher, Dolphy Wortenbaker, said once was, she was advising me about a student, and we were talking about object of meditation, and she gave a particular, she suggested a particular chant of dharma, which, you know, means our calling. And she said, this person is struggling with something, so if you give her a mantra, it occupies the front part of the mind while things can be worked out in the background.
Hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense, but to me, I thought that was quite lovely. Like, that's the thing with yoga, is we don't have to always confront our difficulties head on, you know, that the techniques work sort of indirectly.
Yeah, so or I life think is a mystery, right? So there's an exact science, but at the same time, there is that mystery, that feminine quality of allowing grace to appear. Right. I think that there's probably, just like life is, the balance of the yin and the yang and the male and the female and the systems, which are very important, but at the same time, the flow, the essence of, yeah, the only word that I have is mystery. You can't always analyze and define everything. And so if we allow our mind to be, maybe have a little focus through a mantra or a chant, then like you said, it's a very beautiful image that everything else will work itself out, will integrate, will, we will be, mm-hmm. This is another play I love, Kevin, is a tone mm-hmm. means at one. So a lot of times mm-hmm. when we're inside a tone and just sitting inside a tone and allowing the sound to fill our body, because when we empty ourselves from air, amazingly enough, there's more and more space for tone to embody us, right? So if we're totally full with a huge breath, there's not that much space for sound to be resonating. But when we're emptying and emptying that sound, we're drinking in that divine sound. And I think that's a very beautiful image from Dolphy that things can integrate.
Yeah, when you say that, I mean, I think you're a natural nada yogi. You know, I've been doing a little more research about nada yoga, and, you know, I'm certainly not an expert at this, but nada refers to, it's related to Carnatic music and the scales, but it's using external sound to move, to listen to the internal sound and what we might call the sound of silence. And then they say there are, you know, 11 different layers inside of us. And, you know, the yogis also say that, you know, so when we chant, for example, we use our breath to support and create the sounds. Mm-hmm. And as one teacher told me once, that actually the yogis say that within the breath itself is a constantly repeating mantra. As you inhale, it's mm-hmm. ah, and as you exhale, it's ha, ah, ha. And then, you know, it develops from there. There are chants that go ahum and so hum and onwards, and it gets more complex mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, the yogis say that we are sound. We are compositions of vibration. And so that's really interesting. So, yeah, was saying to you before that these, whether we use Sanskrit or, you know, our native language or something else, something that has a positive for the person, you know, nourishing, supportive, maybe cleansing aspect, could really help the mind rest in something and go from outer to inner and then come back out and live your life from that place. Yeah.
Right. Very beautiful. I know that we have the track, but I thought you might also want to sing it live, talking about all these different sounds. You did write the piece waltz that we were talking about, with different sounds of the same word or the same essence. Peace, in German you'd have Frieden, in you have Shanti. Would you like us to play the track, or would you like to, I know it's early for you, but would you like to sing it live? It's your choice.
I can, you know, I could sing it, a little piece of it now, and then if it works to play the track, you can, if they were able to put it towards the middle. It, you know, it starts off a melody, very simple, and then in the recording, I sing the third above it, and then the fifth above it, and then, you know, there are different harmonies, which is
but
more
why don't
Western.
You why don't you sing it, because today's been one of those
sure.
wild days with the technique and
sure.
technical things. So I think it'd be wonderful if you just sang it, and we will in our own systems we can hear the third and the fifth. Mm-hmm. And I would love to hear your voice, because your speaking voice is so rich that it'd be wonderful to hear you do a little bit of a song or chant, as we say, that you wrote, entitled Peace and Six, or Peace Walls.
Yes.
Sorry
okay.
about that.
Yeah. Yes, either one. Okay, mm-hmm. here I go. Salam, shalom, shanti, pax, pace, peace. Salam, shalom, shalom. Dulce peace. Om.
Wow, you have such like a warm, rich, and luscious voice. Thank you so much. I believe that Krishna, Krishnamacharya, he said, inhale, yes, and God approaches you, hold the inhalation and God remains with you, exhale and you approach God, hold the exhalation and surrender to God. Do you sense that when you exhale and add your tone and your melodies and the words of praise, it's like a living prayer towards God, towards life, us giving something back. We've been given this life, right? So it's our way maybe of giving a little bit back to life, to existence, to keep that harmony and balance out there, that peace.
I think that's, you've said it beautifully, it is like an offering, you know. Meditation can be what's called a yajna or an offering, or I think there's another word I'm not remembering traditionally that talks about worship. Even for people who aren't necessarily oriented, they may not use the word God, but there's something about even when we connect to things like, you know, different sources of light, the sun or water, you know, wow, where do these things come from? Certainly something bigger than us. You know, we're not in control. And so there's something about a kind of connecting to and acknowledging and honoring and a letting go into something that includes me, but we could say is greater than me. And then there can, something in us can relax a bit more.
No,
I love that quote that you, where did you find that quote? It's lovely.
It's my secret.
Okay. Well, that's what
I'll send it to you after the show.
Sa mantrika pranayama. So sa means with. So with mantra pranayama. So if some people in the audience have done practices, pranayama, where you use ratio, where you measure the length of your inhale or exhale or both, and maybe the pauses after exhale and or inhale, this whole technology of ratio practice sometimes is done with counting, right? But it's my understanding that traditionally one actually did this by chanting first out loud on the exhale, and then one, you know, moved the mantra in, and so as you're inhaling you're chanting a mantra and exhaling chanting the mantra, and so you're using the measure, the length of the mantra is what determines the length or of your breath. And so there's something about the breath being infused with both the meaning and the feeling of the mantra that, it's like, you know, spraying some beautiful essential oil in the air. It infuses the pranayama with, again, the meaning and the spirit and the feeling of something. And that really is where pranayama, to me, really naturally turns into meditation.
Well, you just said something also very beautiful. It fuses the feeling and the meaning. And the beauty of the voice is that it really is located between our heart and mind. And it's the, you know, behind the Moses code, the I am that I am. When we put our feeling and integrate it with our mind, you know, this is the amazingness, then we actually have a lot of energy behind word. And we have this this idea that in the beginning there was word and the word was God. And there are many different ways to say that thought. But we know that words carry charged energy, positively and negatively. Mm. And so I think it's really beautiful. Sometimes we forget in our day-to-day, we approach things from a very mental, you know, trying to analyze or trying to be maybe too dogmatic with things, and we forget our heart, and other times we're so in our heart that we might lose balance. And people ask me many times, should I follow my heart or should I follow my mind? I actually say follow your voice, follow your inner voice, because the voice tends to find the balance between inner and outer worlds, between sound and silence, between feeling and our
I
mind.
Love that. I mean, yeah. What you're tuning into, and basically you're saying, traditionally they talk about the heart mind, that the seat of the mind is actually in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a beautiful Sanskrit chant that talks about how the fire in the belly actually nourishes the voice. And then the chant says, may my voice nourish and sustain my heart, and may my heart nourish and sustain that which is eternal in me, and nourish and sustain that which is eternal everywhere in everyone. So, but they connect the voice actually down into the fire in the belly. But yeah, mm-hmm. this thing about the voice being a kind of bridge between head and heart. It's very,
right, head and heart.
Very beautiful. Or,
exactly. Kevin, it's been a pleasure to have you with me today. I am blown away
Thank
by your
you.
Wisdom and your beauty. I hope to have you back on the show again sometime very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.